following podcast is edited from the live Voices of Montana program, Montana's original statewide radio talk show that's heard Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Contact your local radio station if you'd like to hear the program live in your area and it's currently not available. The show is also streamed live on voicesofmontana.com. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program, inviting you to contact us with comments or show ideas. The email address is studio@voicesofmontana.com.
First Friday of the month. I always like it when Friday gets here. I don't care what Friday of the month it is, but it's Fraud Watch Friday. Investment fraud. You might be surprised at the numbers. Almost $1.5 billion wasted in 2018. Along with Al Ward from AARP Montana, Lori Schock's going to be alongside. She's the director of the Office of Investor Education and Advocacy from the Security and Exchange Commission. She's going to help make sure you're not throwing your money on top of that heap here today on Voices of Montana.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio. From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now, a man who loves some nachos, it's Tom Schultz.
Oh, man, I was craving them just the other day. Went out and satisfied that craving. There's nothing like that. All right, let's move on to investment fraud here. And Al Ward is with us here in studio. How's it going, Al?
It's going good.
It's going good. Good. Good to see you. Thanks for coming down. Our guest here today is Lori Schock, Director of the Office of Investor Education and Advocacy with the Security and Exchange Commission. If you go to the SEC website and you look where it says investor questions, they're going to direct you to this office. And Lori Schock directs this office. Why don't you welcome our guest? You know Lori.
Hi, Lori. How are you doing? It's good to hear from you.
Good to be with you again.
Good morning, Lori.
Good morning.
One of the things that I'm interested in right now is we're getting close to the end of the year. Is this a time when you see more investor fraud?
You know, first of all, let me just give my disclaimer, because I work for the government. I have to say that the views I express are mine and mine alone, and not necessarily those of the commission or the commissioners. But, you know, fraud is one of those things. It's 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the time of year doesn't really impact it that much. I do have to say this year with the pandemic and people being at home for large stretches of the workday, maybe they're paying more attention to their accounts. Maybe they're on social media more. I think people are just being inundated a bit more with, you know, fraudulent pitches. But unfortunately, you know, fraud is alive and well, and hasn't slowed down at all during this time.
Lori, the numbers here, maybe they'll surprise people, maybe they won't. I'm looking at something here from, this is from the FTC they had talked about, and there are different kinds of frauds. We got a lot of things to cover here in terms of investment fraud. As I look at some of the warning signs, maybe some of those make sense, but there's some do's that I think we need to share here as well. And I also wanted to talk about, maybe, hopefully you're familiar with this. I grabbed a list of some of these most notable frauds, like the Ponzi scheme with Charles Ponzi, or Bernie Ebbers from WorldCom, or Stratton Oakmont. I kind of wanted to go through those a little bit just to give the example to folks of how easy it can be to be taken by a fraud. So we'll take a break and come on back. Lori Schock is with us. She's the director of the Office of Investor Education and Advocacy with the Security and Exchange Commission. And Al Ward from Montana AARP in studio. Back with more in just a bit. Investment fraud on AARP's Fraud Watch Friday. I'm Tom Schultz. We have Al Ward in studio, state president for AARP. We kind of overlook, he comes in sometimes or frequently first Friday of the month. We overlook his qualifications here, but I want to make sure I give him out because he has a storied career in law enforcement, also in the military, the author of 3 books and several publications on crime and consumer protection. He's also an adult education specialist, has taught over 700 classes. That number probably climbs. It might even be 800 by now in crime and loss prevention, and has been a volunteer with AARP since 2009, and working not only on consumer protection, but American Indian issues. He's educated as well, master's degree in adult education from Seattle University, and a poli-sci guy from the University of Washington. as well. So, Al, we appreciate your expertise. You met Lori Schalk. Why don't you talk about our guest here today from that personal level?
Well, a number of years ago, I had a grant from the National Crime Prevention Council to do fraud programs across the state. And FINRA was where the money came from. And through that, Lori was on a video that AARP produced about investment fraud. And then I ended up going to a training that was done in Helena, and she was there along with Susan Arthur, who was from FINRA at the time.
Great to know, Lori, that you've been in Montana, that you've got this long career, not only in advocacy, but in education as well. I just want to get top of your mind stuff. When people would say, hey, Lori, what's the most important thing that I need to know about investment fraud? What's the first thing you tell them?
You know, the first thing is, look, the good news is there are ways to protect yourself. And so this is a highly regulated industry.
Yeah.
You know, I represent the federal side. You know, I'm based out of Washington, D.C. But there's you have a state securities regulator right there in Helena. And they're watching at the local level. Then you have organizations like FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, that's a self-regulatory organization. And so we keep track of the people who are licensed to do business with you. So the very first thing you can do is check out and make sure anyone who's wanting you to invest with them should be licensed, and they should be licensed in the state of Montana. So go to investor.gov, put in the person's name. If they don't show up in that database as being licensed, that's a huge red flag on the play starting off. You know, we find people do more research on where they're going to go to dinner or maybe where they're going to stay when they go on vacation, what hotel they're going to stay at, than they do researching their financial professional. So if we could get people to do that one simple thing, it would help eliminate a lot of investment fraud that we see at the SEC.
One of the other things I think, too, is both the SEC and, well, actually FINRA, I think, has a website where you can also check out the things that you're thinking about investing in. And I always think that if people would use that system religiously, that we see fewer Ponzi schemes being successful for as long as they are.
Yeah, do people use that website? It's the Security and Exchange Commission. It's SEC.gov. But you have something there called the EDGAR database. Are people more and more taking advantage of the technology that allows them to do better research on investment?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think as people become and have become more and more comfortable using the internet to do background, they expect to find these databases. Well, EDGAR has actually been around for a long time. It's the Electronic Data Gathering, Analysis, and Retrieval database. That's where all of your publicly traded companies, mutual funds, variable annuities, exchange-traded funds, they all have to register and file with the SEC. Now, there are some companies that are exempt from registration, but for most Americans, they're investing in registered products. So that's your second step. If the product that they're trying to sell you is not registered with the SEC, if it's not in EDGAR and you can't find that information, again, red flag, you need to do some more due diligence before you hand over your hard-earned money. Because I have to tell you, unfortunately, fraudsters are not good savers and investors. That's why they steal from other people. And even if we bring a successful enforcement action, there's no money oftentimes to be returned to harmed investors. So we need to have education as the best offense against investment fraud.
You know, I looked quickly at just a summary of the SEC Fiscal 2020 report. And we're going to get into that a little bit. A mix of 715 enforcement actions, including 405 standalone actions. Also judgments totaling approximately $4.68 billion as well. So we'll come on back and talk more investment fraud here on Fraud Watch Friday today on Voices of Montana. Thanks for being here. I'm Tom Schultz. It's Fraud Watch Friday. Al Ward is in studio, state president for Montana's AARP. On the phone is Lori Schalk. She's been to Montana. She is the director of the Office of Investor Education and Advocacy with the Security and Exchange Commission, and does a lot of education on this, does a fair amount, too, of Well, I don't know if you'd, I wouldn't call you the enforcement part of this, Lori, and thank you for being here, but I would say that as an advocate, you would be a part of helping to return, and which I saw from your report as I referenced going into the commercial, there was a $4.6 billion in discouragement and penalties, and $600 million of that went back to harmed investors. I assume that you probably have a hand in that.
You know, part of the work of my office, in addition to investor education, is taking the investor complaints and questions that come in. And so when we hear from harmed investors, we funnel that information to our enforcement division as well as to our examination team. I like to talk about the three E's: examination, enforcement, and education. And so that's where we sort of fit into that group. The enforcement actions that we've brought, like I said, where harmed investors, you know, where these disgorgement funds were set up, you know, they may get some money back, but you really want to do the due diligence on the front end because, it, like you said, it may only be pennies on the dollar that get returned, but any money that's returned is good money for the investor. So, we were pleased with the numbers that came out, but this is one of those things we can always do more on the front end than we can on the back end. When it comes to helping investors, we'll never be able to litigate our way out of investment fraud. So I think education is the key here.
Well, and as you said before, a lot of these people don't have a lot of money by the time you get to them. So they're not really going to be a source of income for the people who've lost their money.
Let's talk, Lori, about who is likely to be a victim of investment fraud.
You know, investment fraud doesn't discriminate. So what we do know, though, is older Americans are targeted more often. And, you know, this is the Willie Sutton principle, if you will. Remember Willie Sutton, the bank robber, and he was asked, why do you rob banks? Well, that's where the money is. The same thing goes when it comes to fraudsters who are involved in investment fraud. They target older Americans because that's where the money is. And so they're not, you know, older Americans aren't more susceptible to it, but they just get targeted so much more often, whether it's a free lunch seminar, whether it's online, whether, it's a romance scam, whatever it is, con artists are smart. They use the tools and technology. They read the headlines and they really use people's emotions against them. And when it comes to money, it's always emotional. So it's one of those things that, everyone has to have their guard up at all times, but especially those who may not have the ability to make up any losses, whether they're not in the workforce any longer or just don't have the time and resources to recoup those types of losses. So, having that due diligence on the front end, I think, is always helpful.
Plus, it's also with the technology that we have, it's really easy for some of these cons to come up with some really slick brochures to make people think that they're very solid corporations.
Well, and I think that's it. That's part of the scam, isn't it, Lori? What they want to do up front is try to convince you that they're legitimate so you don't go to Edgar and check out, and do all your due diligence, correct?
That's absolutely correct. And yet, what does CON stand for? It stands for confidence. Mm-hmm. So they want to gain your confidence. And they do that by they look like they are successful. They have the trappings of success. They may have the corner office. They may have the house in the right neighborhood. They may go to the right church. They may belong to the right social groups. But remember, all of that can be faked. You can rent the house. You can rent the space. You can rent the car. You can put up degrees that you just printed off of your computer that there's no there. That's why we need people to independently verify this information. And so we can, license and registration, just like if the policeman pulls you over for speeding, it's the same thing. The person needs to be licensed and the product needs to be registered. So, keep that in mind. And here's another red flag that often is overlooked: guaranteed returns. When it comes to investing, there are no guarantees. So anyone who says I can guarantee this, again, red flag on the play right here.
Well, that's what got a lot of folks in trouble at a big level here. Maybe we'll have a chance to talk about that. I've got a headline breakup coming here, but I wanted to finish off just a thought here. I was looking at some data, and this comes from the Federal Trade Commission. It was by Paul Witt, who's the supervisor just an analyst there. Talked about it's not only older folks, they'll tend to lose more money, but as he was talking about 2018, younger people reported losing money to fraud more often than older folks. So there's also a fair warning out there for young folks looking to get into investment.
Absolutely. Like I said, no one is immune to this. Just those who lose more tend to be older. But yes, absolutely. You know, the one thing is when you lose money early on in your career or your life, maybe you went to the school of hard knocks, you learned a lesson, but you have that time to recoup those losses. Mm-hmm. Sometimes some of the most devastating investor complaints that we get are the ones where, you know, it was every penny I owned and I'm, in my 70s.
Yeah.
And there's not a chance to make that up. And look, these fraudsters they have no scruples. So they will have someone mortgage their house. When the house has been paid off, they'll have them mortgage it. They'll have them use up all their credit on their credit cards. They will leave them homeless, penniless, and on the street. They don't care. So that's one of those things. And this is when we need everybody in the community to have their eyes and ears open for this. And if you think you have fraud in your community, contact your state securities regulator. Contact the SEC. Contact FINRA. Check it out before other people are harmed and before, people turn over their money. But don't stay silent if you think, I might have been a victim of this, because if there's potential you have been a victim, then your neighbors may also become victims.
Hey, if you've got a question, it's 866-627-5483 or text message 781-627-5483. We do have a question, a call from KC. We'll go to that in just a moment. All right, going to talk a bit later on pump and dump schemes, promissory notes, the pyramid schemes you might be familiar with, Ponzi schemes, microcap fraud. We are talking about investment fraud here today on Fraud Watch Friday. Quickly take a phone call before that 9:35 break. Casey is listening in Great Falls on KQDI. Good morning, Casey. You're on the air with Lori Schock and Al Ward.
Good morning. As I'm getting older, I've had some experience with some of these topics, but one in particular that seems to be putting a lot of information or advertisement towards my demographic. I'm getting up there and I got some health problems a little bit, not real bad, but, and one of them is stem cell therapy. Some of these areas is kind of hard to, even though you do your research, you can't find a definitive answer about the legitimacy of the outfit or not, because it's kind of on the margins of science. There's some, there's opinions about whether they're legitimate or not. So those are the areas, the kind of gray area that I wondered if you run across some of this. I got a couple calls yesterday from a outfit in Coeur d'Alene that, and they have some kind of, you come over and we'll put you up in the motel and we'll wine and dine you, and yet it costs like $10,000 to $15,000, $20,000. You get the aching and pain. You have aches and pains in your joints and whatever. And this thing, it's almost like too good to be true, I think. And yet there is some legitimacy. You look at it on the internet and you'll find there is some people that are helped. So it's kind of the gray area.
Casey, thank you.
You run across this in your travels.
Yeah, Lori, stem cell fraud, or in particular, maybe the advancements of science. We got a minute before we'll have to go to break here, and we can finish up on the other side. What's your experience with those types of frauds?
Just from what you said, it's a lot of red flags went up for me immediately. One, they approached you. You didn't approach them, so that's an unsolicited offer. So I always have issues with that. Also, the fact of the cost of it, they're going to put you up in a hotel and wine and dine you. That just doesn't sound like serious medical work here. Also, I haven't heard anything about a doctor, your doctor being involved with this, not a doctor that they bring along with it. So just right there, those are some red flags I would want to look up. And then also I want to check with the Federal Trade Commission, because they're going to follow up on this, as well as maybe NIH and some of the medical facilities that are government based. So they don't have, you know, a sales position in this at all.
Glad to hear. Thanks for that. And Casey, thanks for the call, too. Appreciate that. We've got to take this break. We'll come on back. Still lots more to discuss as we talk about investment fraud here today on AARP's Fraud Watch Friday.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 1-866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana, with Tom Schultz.
You know, once it's gone, it's pretty much gone for good. That's why we talk an awful lot about how to be sure, and today it's investment fraud, but lots and lots of frauds on Fraud Watch Friday because your money's, you work too hard for it. It's just too valuable to let it go without the right amount of research. And so today with Al Ward in studio, I'm Tom Schultz. Al's with AARP, State President for Montana. And on the line is Lori Schock. And Lori Schock with the Securities and Exchange Commission. She's actually the director of the Office of Investor Education and Advocacy. And as I pointed out earlier, you go to the SEC website and under the heading Investor Questions, you'll find the phone number for Lori's office. So certainly appreciate your expertise, Lori.
Great, thanks. Hey, you know, let me give that telephone number. How about that?
Do it.
Okay. For those who have questions or complaints, give us a call. It's 1-800-732-0330. Again, that number is 1-800-732-0330. Our attorneys and investor specialists staff that during the days. We will respond to you if you don't get a hold of someone initially, but we will respond to you within one business day. Also, you can contact us through investor.gov. That's the retail website we set up for investors. So we have SEC.gov, but we also have investor.gov. And that's where we put our investor alerts and bulletins. Information is always out there.
That's really cool because I think maybe I'm not average Joe, but I think a lot of investors might go, Security and Exchange Commission, I'm not going to give them a call. That's the SEC. I'm not sure that they're going to be able to help me. I'm a regular Joe. But you guys are out there to help regular Joes and Janes.
Absolutely. That is our job. Last year, we helped over 20,000 Americans who had, like I said, questions and complaints. And it could be anything. You know, it could be, hey, look, my aunt passed away and I found stock certificates. Do they have any value? We'll help research those and let you know, whether you're a millionaire or unfortunately that company went out of business in the 30s, you know, but however it plays out. But I hate to use a cliche, but we're from the government and we're here to help. And we really are.
Love it.
One of the questions that I have, Lori, is have you seen anything specific, you know, as far as fraud is concerned around either COVID or the census or any of the things that are going, the election, anything that's going on right now?
What's the buzz?
You know, like I said earlier, these scammers are smart and they're slick. They read the headlines. So when, you know, COVID broke out and when it came to the United States, they were there to greet it with open arms and to come out with their scams. In fact, we put out our first investor alert in early February of this year related to COVID scams. Okay? So we're talking February 4th of 2020. We're putting out our first investor alert. And it had to do with microcap companies. These are small, thinly traded companies that were making these outlandish claims that maybe they had the best personal protection equipment or even we have a cure for COVID. And so what we did from on the enforcement side is suspend trading in those companies. And we can do that when a company can't support what they're claiming. At this point in time, so in November, we are now up to over 36 companies have been suspended because of these types of COVID-related claims. And like I said, it happens with these thinly traded companies because it doesn't take a lot of movement, you know, to move the stock price. And this goes back to what is a traditional pump and dump scheme, if you will. Strathmore Oakmont, the Wolf of Wall Street, you might recall. Same thing. It was a pump and dump. Well, they just took that, you know, old song, gave it a fresh face, and put a COVID spin on it for this year. And like I said, we've already had 36 companies that have been suspended, as well as other enforcement actions that have taken place.
Let's talk about that a little bit. That Stratton Oakmont, Jordan Belfort, he was sentenced. There was a loss of $200 million. And I didn't know, a pump and dump firm in the 90s, brokers would drive up the price of stocks, and then Belfort and his partners would cash out, causing the stock to plummet. What he did was he hired hundreds of ambitious brokers, and they cold called unsuspecting people selling these stocks. In 1998, he was indicted. That is your prototypical pump and dump scheme, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, look, like you said, they hired hundreds of people to cold call using telephones. Well, fraudsters still use the telephone, but they also have now the internet, social media, email, chat rooms, you know, letters, newsletters, those still are out there. But it's like all these other ways to get into someone's home and to get their pitch in front of them. So it's not just the calls, but trust me, the callers are still out there. But now they have these other avenues that they exploit as well.
The unfortunate thing, I think, that most people ignore is the fact that when somebody cold calls you, you have no idea who's on the other end of the line. And they can tell you whatever they want. And if you don't check it out, you're not going to find out that they're not really selling anything of value to you.
Well, Al, you're right. You know, that's exactly what happened with our caller who called in. You know, that was what I called an unsolicited offer, because you have no idea who's on that other end. And quite frankly, they can say they are whomever, but that makes it even more difficult to verify. And so, you know, let's go with Ronald Reagan, trust but verify. That verification part is so important to have.
I'm looking at the terms here of frauds that I'm not familiar with when it comes to investment frauds. Even though we might be familiar with a Ponzi scheme or a pyramid scheme, this is one of the originals. It goes back to 1920, but we still see this going on today in various modified forms, right?
Unfortunately, Ponzi schemes are going to be with us probably till the end of days, if you will. And essentially, the hallmarks of a Ponzi scheme. Charles Ponzi, as you said, back in the early 1900s, did this with, it was a coupon for stamps that he was trying to arbitrage the difference between it. Well, he just found it was easier to use new investors' money to pay off the guaranteed returns to his older investors. Mm. So it was sort of borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, if you will. And remember what I said earlier when it comes to guaranteed returns, when it comes to investing, there are no guarantees. In fact, that is one of the hallmarks of our enforcement actions that we bring in cases that deal with retail investors, is there's always that pitch of it was a guaranteed return. And normally it's an outrageous guarantee. I mean, you know, what's outrageous? Well, right now, if someone were to guarantee you 8%, I'd take it, right? Because I don't know about your bank accounts in Montana, but I'm less than 1% here in the D.C. area. Mm-hmm. And so you just know, but yet you want that higher return. You want that safe income. Everyone wants a guarantee, but it just isn't there, especially when it comes to investing. And so, you know, for other hallmarks for a Ponzi scheme is someone can say, hey, look, you're going to get these high investments and high guaranteed returns with no risk or consistent returns. Hey, you'll be guaranteed 1% per month. I wish it went that way. You know, the historical return for the S&P 500 is about 10%. I wish it was 10% consistently year after year after year. But as anyone who knows the stock market, it's not. It goes up, it goes down, and you have to sort of even out the ride. Well, so to have consistent returns, you just aren't going to be there. And also, almost always, Ponzi schemes are dealing with unlicensed people exploiting and selling unregistered products. So, again, just something that you want to keep in mind. And here's something else. If someone says this is a secret, or, hey, don't tell anyone this is our secret little club, see, that's another red flag. Because when it comes to investing, there really, like I said, there's a lot of disclosure around it. Yeah. So there's not secrecy.
And there's a couple of things I wanted to hit. I mean, you guys have a whistleblower program that has rewarded quite a bit of money, but I wanted, before we get to that, Lori, what are reasonable fees? I know you're not an investor and you're coming to your own, so to speak, but what are reasonable fees? Are there warning signs in that?
You know, reasonable fees. So that's something we believe in, you know, free markets and capitalism, and fees will be something that firms compete against each other for. So I can't say what's reasonable and what's not reasonable, but when you start looking at products, in fact, FINRA has a great tool where you can compare mutual fund and exchange-traded funds, and you can cross between either all, you know, three different types of mutual funds or ETFs, and you can see those fees on a side-by-side comparison. I would encourage people to use tools like that because, hey, look, let's say it's an S&P 500 fund. If you're investing in the same 500 companies. The only difference here is going to be the fees. So which one is less? Which one's best for you? Are you investing a lot of money at once? So maybe an ETF would be better because you pay one commission and you're done. Or, hey, I'm investing smaller amounts on an ongoing basis, or maybe a mutual fund would be better. You know, it's just what works best for you, but there are tools out there to be able to do those comparisons. And we really need people to do that homework before they invest because fees will eat away at your overall returns, especially when you're investing for long-term goals such as retirement and things like that. And it's amazing how much, you know, a 1% difference in fees makes over the long haul.
Yeah. I'm going to give this out. FINRA, as you guys have referenced, is the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, and it is FINRA.org for more information. And they offer securities helpline. It says for seniors and others, that number is 844-574-3577. You can always call us here. We'll give you those numbers as well. But just look FINRA, FINRA.org for more information. Billions of dollars every year, like I say, can get wasted. You don't have to throw your money on the heap. Investment fraud today on AARP's Fraud Watch Friday. Some concluding thoughts here. Lori Schock is with us, Director of the Office of Investor Education and Advocacy with the SEC. And Al Ward in studio, AARP State President for Montana.
Well, you know, a couple of things that I see on our list of don'ts is don't make investment decisions based on TV commercials, phone calls, or email solicitations. Once again, you might get interested in something, but check it out before you send anybody any money. And then don't judge an investment opportunity by a company's slick website. Because a lot of times it's really easy to put a website together, and it doesn't cost a whole lot.
AARP has these tip sheets on their website, and they're really, really informative for the public. Lori, I wanted to talk a little bit about the whistleblower program, because I just saw recently you guys awarded $36 million in one case specifically. But I don't want to exclude your final thoughts here as well. Share those with us.
Sure. You know, our whistleblower program has been a phenomenal program. This was set up under Dodd-Frank that came to pass in 2010. So it's about 10 years old at this point in time. It's really matured over the years. And this is what generally where insiders at companies will come to the SEC after exhausting their internal compliance procedures and say, hey, look, we're seeing a problem with this company. And so, yes, these awards sound like, you know, they're very large, and they are, but it's only when the money has been received from the firms, you know, that the whistleblower is paid out. But it really has been a very effective program, you know, for finding frauds that we may or may not have found on our own. So I can't say how great of a program that is. But, you know, one of my final thoughts, though, everyone accesses their accounts these days pretty much over the Internet, and I just want to make sure some folks are doing things to protect themselves against investment fraud. So some real key things, make sure that you're using strong passwords on your accounts, change them regularly, use two-factor authentication. You know, that's when you say you try to log in using your password and then the company texts you an additional number to enter. Use biometric safeguards if they're offered. That's like using your fingerprint or facial recognition on your smartphone. Be careful using any other computer system or Wi-Fi that is not yours that you control. So if you go to a hotel and use their computers, don't access your financial information. Same thing with hotspots with Wi-Fi. You know, that's not your network. Someone else may be spying on it over that. This is an area, like I said, we all access our accounts. It's all digital these days. Just be careful out there. and do these things to help protect yourself. And please don't use the same password for all of your financial accounts, because then if one gets hacked, they can all be hacked.
No, that's really good advice. I appreciate that reminder, too, because we had a Fraud Watch Friday. We talked about those passwords. It can take, an hour or so. If your password is 8 characters, if it's 12 characters, it can take up to 2 years for a scamster to get through that. So they'll move on. Hey, Lori, thank you so much for the work you do and for being on the program. And we'd love to talk to you again, okay?
Gentlemen, I hope to see you in Montana next time I'm out there.
Absolutely. Lori Schock, Director of the Office of Investor Education and Advocacy, and Al Ward, AARP. You guys have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers, and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.